Subject Woman.
Frauenperspektiven aus aller Welt.
Einen wunderschönen Abend, liebe Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer. Herzlich willkommen zu Subject Woman, Frauenperspektiven aus aller Welt. Ich bin Elena Smirnova. In der heutigen Sendung habe ich in unserem virtuellen Studio eine sehr spannende Gesprächspartnerin eingeladen, Anna Altschuler. Anna ist in Russland geboren, in Nizhny Novgorod, wohnt seit dem Jahr 2001 in den Niederlanden, in der Stadt Den Bosch. Seit dem Beginn des Krieges engagiert sich Anna auch als aktive Mitglied der feministischen Antikriegsbewegung. Das ist eine Initiativgruppe, die in Russland in den ersten Tagen des Krieges gegründet wurde Diese Gruppe organisiert sehr, sehr, sehr viele kleine oder auch größere Aktionen, um auch zu zeigen, dass auch in Russland es genügend Menschen gibt, die unter diesen schweren Bedingungen ihre Stimme erheben und zeigen, dass es wichtig ist, gegen diesen Krieg zu protestieren. Und auch zeigen, dass die Antikriegsbewegung definitiv ein feministisches Thema ist. Diese Antikriegsbewegung hat auch mehrere Sektionen, auch darunter auch in Europa, zum Beispiel in Niederlande. Und die mit der Vertreterin dieser Sektion, mit der Anna, habe ich ein Interview aufgezeichnet vorher. Und in diesem Gespräch haben wir sehr viele Themen besprochen, um euch, liebe Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer, zu zeigen, was das bedeutet eigentlich, als eine Russin derzeit in Europa sich aktiv, besonders aus der feministischen Perspektive, gegen diesen Krieg laut zu machen, welche Aktionen und mit welchen Mitteln protestiert man, wie man sich dabei fühlt und warum es unglaublich wichtig ist. All diese Themen haben wir versucht, mit Anna anzusprechen. Also bleiben Sie dran, es ist ein sehr vielfältiges, spannendes und teilweise auch sehr ehrliches und sehr persönliches Gespräch. Ich hoffe, es kann Ihnen einige Einblicke gewähren. Bleiben Sie dran.
Subject Woman.
Frauenperspektiven aus aller Welt.
Hello, Anna. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you that you found this few minutes for us. You live in the Netherlands and you are also an activist for the anti-war resistance group. Maybe you can introduce yourself for our publicum.
Hi, my name is Anna Altschuler. I'm originally from Russia and now I live in the Netherlands for the last year. And I consider myself a feminist most of my life. And I did a lot of activism back in Russia, but it was more towards promotion women in business. And when I came to the Netherlands and the war started, I was desperately looking for ways to change something, to make some impact. And then I came across this feminist anti-war resistance group, which emerged in Russia after the beginning of the war. And those brave women, they spoke up despite the fact that it was super dangerous and it still is super dangerous for them back in Russia. And me and several other activists here in the Netherlands decided that we have to support them. We have to do something to speak up here, to tell people about what's happening and to keep attention on the war and the fact that it's still going on. So we created the Dutch division of feminist anti-war resistance. And yes, we're trying to support our sisters worldwide.
Wow, that's very great and very interesting story. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about your work in the recent months. So what kind of work are you doing? Is it more in social media? Is it more on the street?
Well, I would say we all do a lot. And this group we are in, it's not, it doesn't mean we do something as a must. We all do a bunch of different stuff. So we have women who volunteer in the meeting points for the Ukrainians. We support the refugees from Russia, but we also do a little bit of street actions. So in recent months, what we did a protest in Rotterdam against buying Russian gas and oil, because basically every citizen, every person living in the Netherlands still pays €2 per day to Russia, despite all the sanctions. And we wanted to move public's attention to the fact that it's primarily Gazprom money who are financing the war now. And another big action we did, which got a lot of public attention, it was across the Russian embassy in The Hague. And I myself, unfortunately, wasn't able to join, but several amazing ladies there, they painted themselves with fake blood, and they laid down in the form, in the shape of letter Z, which is used now by the Russian army as their core sign. And that was to us to primarily get attention to the fact that the war is still ongoing. It hasn't gone anywhere. And secondly, that this war every day kills the most unprotected people. It kills women, it kills children. And Russia as a country really became a terrorist state, which is damaging people around it.
Yes, I saw the photos of this, particularly this action in Instagram, and it is really impressive. And as you already said, this is unbelievably brave ladies who participated in this action. But nevertheless, in Netherlands, as you also mentioned, you're working in a relatively safe environment in compared to our Russian sisters who are participating in this anti-war resistance movement under completely different circumstances. Are you in connection with them? Maybe you can also give us a little bit of glimpse on their work.
Well, I think the most important thing to know about the feminist anti-war resistance is that it's a completely horizontal structure. So we don't have bosses, we don't have leaders. We all work as coordinators and equal members of this informal society. And our sisters in Russia, they have several divisions of work. So primarily, yes, they do street actions to attract attention to the fact there is war. They also create a lot of materials which don't actually look like anti-war communication, but they are. Like, they have a newspaper or a leaflet which looks like an actual newspaper to be distributed to older generations who don't use internet. They also come up with very creative ways to protest without a huge risk of being stopped and arrested by the police. For instance, they created the price tags which you could change in stores, which said there is a war happening in Ukraine and Russia is killing people. But unfortunately, even those safer ways are not really safe. For instance, one of the activists, her name is Alexandra Skalichenko, she has been arrested. She's in jail now for several months, and she has physical conditions which make it really dangerous for her to be in jail. And she's facing up to 10 years in prison. And this is also one of the very important messages which I'm trying to send to people around me, that it's very dangerous to protest in Russia, and people who do that, they're true heroes and heroines.
I wanted to ask you why feminist anti-war resistance group became one of the leading anti-war resistance group in Russia? Because as we see, most of the people who articulate their opinion against the war their women, especially now in Russia?
I would say historically, in Russia, feminists were the first groups who started to talk about systematic discrimination. As I see, the war in Ukraine is the extreme form of a systematic discrimination of a national minority or of a nation. Because basically, in my perspective, Ukraine is being now punished for trying to be a separate state. And feminists were the first people who started to talk about the colonial roots of the Russian aggression. And they started to deconstruct the Russian colonialism. Because when you think of Russia, you basically don't think about it as a country who had colonies. But if you look at the history of the country development, it was conquering one state after the other and absorbing it in some way. So firstly, I would say the feminists were the first one to understand the roots and the origins of the war. And secondly, I've been working in some kind of volunteering groups basically since I was 18. And I can honestly say it was always heavily female dominated. And I don't want to say anything bad about our male about the men who help us, about the men who volunteer. But even here in the Netherlands, I see that most of the volunteers, most of the people who organize something are women. And it's hard for me to say either it's due to the way we were brought up with more empathy towards the others, or is it historical, but for some reason, it's the female movement which has become the most prominent. Also, there's a huge stereotype in Russia, back in Russia, that it's safer for women to protest, that you're not getting that hard beat up or you're not getting arrested that often as men, which is, as we see, is not the case right now because women are getting arrested and they are in really bad conditions. But there is a huge stereotype that it's safer for the girls.
Let's try to talk about the patriarchy and about the patriarchal roots of wars, I would say. That very often is a topic in the feminist anti-war discourses.
Russia, for the last 20 years, was becoming more and more a patriarchal state. And Putin is portraying himself as basically a masculine idol, you know, with riding these horses, bare chest, and going into forests, etc., etc. So he really became this supreme masculine figurine who basically is doing to Ukraine, his behavior with Ukraine is exactly a behavior of an abusive husband who beats up his wife and doesn't let her go. If you look at the ways he's talking about Ukrainian people, it's exactly this patriarchal approach, but instead of a single person, he's terrorizing now a whole country. And basically, if we look at the closest neighbor, the way, for instance, Lukashenko, the self-proclaimed president of Belarus, is talking about himself and Belarusian people, it's again completely same narrative. They're talking about a country like it's their property and they are entitled to it. They have it because they once had it and they don't let it go. And if you also think about the roots of different systematic discrimination, you can see that basically they all work in more or less the same way. So this is why feminists really got it better. We know and understand patriarchal discrimination, and this is how we understood also the colonial discrimination. or minority discrimination.
Speaking about minority discrimination, it's actually also very interesting because one of the very important topic of this feminist anti-war resistant group in Russia is giving the voice to a minority woman. Why is it so important?
I subscribe, if I can say that, to intersectional feminism, which means I believe that different layers and different ways of discrimination, they work together. So when you're at the same time a woman and you represent a national minority, you probably face more discrimination than a white woman or a Russian woman. And this was very important from the very beginning to give the word to the people who usually don't have it, and also to let them do that in their own language. Because one of the huge problems, which was basically discovered after the war started, is that discrimination in Russia is very systematical. So the way Russia now is fighting Ukrainian language was exactly the way they treated all other national languages. I spent a lot of my childhood in Chuvashia, which is a national region, and it was the language there is almost destroyed. It was uncool to speak it. It was the village language. It was not the language of city people. And the word itself, if you call someone Chuvash, it was like a very offensive thing to say. So it was really uncool living within a national state to be of this nation. And this is why after we saw all the layers of discrimination, it was really important for us to give words to those who never were able to express themselves. And another thing is that there is a lot of talks in Russian society and all around the world that all these terrible things the Russian army is doing in Ukraine, it's not the Russians. It's the wild minorities from Buryatia, from Kalmykia, from other regions. It's them, it's the wild people, it's not the good Russian guys. And even the Russian opposition is saying that over and over again. And it's very important not to keep discriminating people on the national basis. And there is also a big group which is called Free Buryatia Foundation, who is actually trying to fight this stereotype of people being cruel because they come from Buryatia. And I think there is a lot of synergy between the feminist anti-war movement and the national movements who are also trying to fight discrimination.
But how can the feminist perspective help us to deconstruct this narrative?
I think that feminist narrative and all other anti-discrimination narratives, they go hand in hand. So basically, being a feminist, I already have the language to talk about it. You know, I know how discrimination looks, and they say that the moment you open your eyes, you can't close them again. When you learn how to define discrimination, you cannot really stop seeing that. And for a lot of people, it's still a discussion, what is discrimination, what is not. And for instance, when I was doing my anti-discrimination workshops back in Russia, people really asked me, why is it rude to make fun of other people's name? You know, why can't we put for Slavic people only when we are hiring? So for a lot of people, they only start thinking about it. For people who were thinking about discrimination for many, many years, it's kind of a natural thing to understand what's happening there. And I consider myself a national minority as well. And I know how hard it is to speak up, because in a lot of cases, you get the answer, oh, you're just too sensitive, or you're just thinking too much about yourself. But I think it's really important for us who already understood what discrimination is to fight all other forms of discrimination as well, because not many people have the possibility to speak up as we do right now.
Already speaking about the discrimination, now you living in the Netherlands, being Russian, do you face this kind of discrimination?
No. I can honestly say I haven't experienced any form of discrimination. Yes, my bank account was double checked, but I consider this a normal procedure. All my colleagues, I'm really thankful to my colleagues, because from day one, they were supporting me every day. And I hear, like, we have rumors sometimes that there were some facts of discrimination here and there, but I only see single cases which are all being looked into. Mm-hmm. So no, I don't see systematic discriminations of Russians or people from Russia. And I really hope it stays the same.
No, but we just know that, you know, in Russian media, you really hear a lot about this kind of discrimination towards the Russian people, and especially in Europe. That's why that was important for me to ask you, because, you know, you already mentioned that you know how the discrimination looks like. Despite the different topics, it still has the same faces and the same processes lays behind that. So maybe it's for you easier to demonstrate it and to show it, yes, it is a discrimination, or no, it's a normal security procedure that is understandable at the moment.
The only thing I could add is that what I see here in the Netherlands a lot, I don't find it discriminating, but it can be, you know, extreme curiosity, which might be considered insensitive, but I fully understand where it comes from. And when people ask me about my attitude to war and to what's happening, I'm always open to discuss it and tell my perspective. So I don't see it as discrimination.
You mentioned that there is a huge history for the feminist anti-war movement, but I also know that there are some examples from Russia. Can you maybe give a glimpse on that topic?
This is not the first war Russia has started, even in the last decades. There were two big wars inside Russia in Chechnya. And during those wars in Chechnya, the female protest was very prominent, and it was primarily led by the mothers of the soldiers. So it was the mothers of the Russian soldiers who proactively required the state to stop the war and bring their sons back. And this is, for me, one of the big examples how women influenced the events in the country.
Is this feminist anti-war resistance group in Russia, they are some kind of organized as an NGO, or is it just an initiative group?
It's just an initiative group. They don't have NGO registered. They don't have anything official. It's just a unity of women and others who support them to fight against the war.
Is there any other initiative groups in Europe, like the sections of these feminist anti-war resistance groups in Europe? Do you have some contact with them? Do you organize some activities together? Are you exchanging the information, updating yourself? Or how is it organized inside of this very horizontal structure?
There is coordination. It's mostly going via the Central Russian group. So we learn about different initiatives mostly via social media. Me personally, I'm not in contact with them. So I'm not currently planning to organize something. But there are other movements other than feminist anti-war resistance. For instance, here in the Netherlands, there is a group which is called Free Russia NL. And they are officially an NGO already, and they're working in different directions, supporting women of Ukraine who are currently in the Netherlands, Russian refugees, and other groups who need support. So this group also has several directions they're working on. One is mass protests and some kind of public speaking up against the war. For instance, they did, I would say it was a little show, like a parade of Putin in Hague, since we have the Hague right here and we really want to see him there sometime. There was already some pre-communication done. Another direction is organizing events for Russian-speaking community. For instance, we had an event in one of the cities here where we were writing letters to the people who are in prison now for their views and actions in Russia. There is a separate part which is creating, it's called Help Bot. So it's literally a chat bot where you can post your needs and they will find people who can help you. It's primarily targeted on Ukrainians living here currently, and it has helped already thousands of people. So it's really an amazing platform. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of work. There's also work with the government of the Netherlands, providing them some information about Russian attitude towards what's happening, because we think it's important our voice to be heard not only in streets, but in the cabinets where the decisions are made. So there is a lot of work and a lot of people behind it.
Since the 24th of February, always when I'm doing an interview, you know, I'm asking all my interview partners the same question, where you were on the 24th of February and how you found out that there is a war.
Yeah, that's a very tough question for me to answer, because on 24th of February, I woke up in Moscow. I was on a business trip and I woke up at 5 and I saw what just happened. So literally half an hour before the war has started, I was terrified completely, and I started calling my husband, but it was still 3 a.m. in the Netherlands, so he didn't pick up, and I was super panicked. I tried to rebook my flight for earlier time, but it was already impossible. I was completely terrified until the last moment. I couldn't believe it started, you know, like, I literally was telling all my contacts that it's a power play and Putin is just trying to squeeze something from the West, trying to push this way. Until the last moment, I did not believe this will happen. So, yeah, I was completely terrified, shocked, and that's how it was.
And you knew immediately that there will be this kind of you communicating against the war and participating also in this protest actions on the streets. Or how was it for you? How you came up with this decision? Okay, I need to be loud about that.
Basically, I think no matter how long we left Russia or what we did living in Russia, a lot of people felt this enormous guilt for what's happening. And I was looking for ways, I can say it absolutely openly, I was looking for the ways to make me feel a little bit better, you know, to find ways that help me be a little bit less miserable. So the first thing I did, we had huge protests in Amsterdam for several weeks. So I joined one of these and I spoke up also on social media. So I was open about it from day one. And then, I started to volunteer to help sort through humanitarian aid, to buy stuff for Ukrainians coming here, to translate, etc., etc. So I was looking for ways to be more impactful. And I noticed it's really making my life a bit easier as well. but also finding this group of women who are so united around this idea of doing something together and trying to stop the war with our bare hands, it was really a bit liberating and lifted a lot of weight from my shoulders.
You told that you joined this group not to feel such miserable and to be able to cope with the guilt feeling. Have you found a way to deal with that?
It's still super hard because the war still goes on. You know, if we don't hear about it every day, it doesn't mean it stopped. And whole cities are being destroyed. There's thousands of people who lost everything, their houses, their close people. So it's still super hard. But what I found really troubling me is that I see a lot of people who keep fighting with each other, Russian-speaking people who are on the same side, they still spend multiple hours discussing on Facebook who did what wrong and who is the good Russian, who is the bad Russian, etc., etc., etc. And I found a really good way of coping with it. Like every time I feel like not agreeing with someone and saying someone else what to do, I go to this chatbot. And I take the first request for help, and I go buy some diapers for people. You know, like I really found it a great way to deal with pain, just to help others, to stop pitying myself, to stop feeling bad. You know, just go do something good, and for me that has become the best way to cope with this kind of trauma.
Anna, thank you very much for your time and for everything what you're doing. And it was a great pleasure to have you in our studio.
Thank you.
Subject Woman.
Frauenperspektiven aus aller Welt.